All right, continuing on with my interviews, it's the fifth anniversary of Live this week. Today is Wednesday, and tomorrow is the actual anniversary. I have a one final guest tomorrow, but I have to get Mark Whitten in here, whose gamer tag is...
Not Win.
So, Mark, you've been with the team since before launch of the original Xbox.
That's right.
And what was your original role with that?
Well, I first started on Xbox. My first job was figuring out why you would put a hard drive on a game console, and I did a bunch of work on our system software, the dashboard, a lot of the original features on the box, and I transitioned over to a bunch of the customer-facing features on Live.
Right.
Right after we launched the console.
Like what? What are some of the? So let's be clear. So I've been talking all week through with a bunch of different folks about this. You had the console out there. It had an Ethernet port that wasn't being used for an entire year. So then once you launched, you moved over and started working on the Live features.
That's right. There was a team that had already started to go off. I always think about the decision to not launch online with the original launch of the console is one of the best things that we ever did.
Because right.
One of the things that we figured out is that we could get something done if we wanted to launch online at the same time we launched on the console.
Right.
You know, we could have just stuck out standard, you know, peer-to-peer networking and given it to game developers. But we had such a bigger vision of what we wanted to do that we started running for a longer sort of goal line. So after the console shipped, I went over to sort of help bulk up that team, really drive the implementation of a bunch of the features like stats and matchmaking, you know, gamer tags, how the system was perceived by end users.
So I want to talk about gamer tags for a second. When you guys were sitting around and coming up with the concept of gamer tags back in, was it 2001, maybe 2002?
Yeah.
What were you thinking of when you had some of those, you know, some of those, you know, like, well, we're going to have one name, or how did you, tell me about some of the background.
Well, you know, it's an obvious problem. You got to figure out how did we want, you know, people to look on the system. Was it going to be their email address?
Right.
Was it going to be, you know, some sort of, you know, nickname? We had been playing around with a bunch of these concepts for a while. And back then, the company that we looked at a lot was AOL. And the reason
right.
we did is because they had a huge namespace. They had tons of members. And we were always thinking, you know, is it too hard to create one there? What do the names look like? What's
right.
it going to look like? Not when we launch this and we have, you know, say a few hundred thousand users. But
millions.
We were thinking, you know, 5 years out, what the system was going to look like. Was it going to be too hard to get one of these? So we started playing around. We also had a lot of other limitations, like this was not a high-definition box. And
right.
so you had to worry about how many characters you were going to show on the screen, and you didn't want it to be really cluttered. It was that TV feel versus
right.
the computer feel. But we were playing around with a couple of concepts, and one of the ones that we were looking at was both the gamer tag, which was going to be 15 characters,
right.
as well as this idea of a realm, which was, you know, could we split the namespace into multiple different realms so that it could be easier to make one of these up?
So right? there could be another Not Win on
That's
another
right.
realm.
There could have been totally tons of Major Nelsons.
Right, exactly.
Now there was a pretty good story about this. We played around with this for a long time. We went back and forth. I was never a big fan of it.
Right.
For three or four reasons. One of them being, first of all, you know, splitting your namespace by, you know, some other number, 9
right.
or 10, doesn't really change the problem. Once
right.
you get to millions of users,
right.
it's still going to be hard or it's not going to be hard.
Right.
The second one is, you know, going back to the conversation about it being on a TV, adding another string on there, right, you're going to be reading a novel in the middle of your
right.
In the middle of your matchmaking session. But the best part was is where we had ended up early on was we had decided on 9 realms, and they were named after the planets.
Okay.
And had really big problems with this.
So it could have been like Earth-Major Nelson or Major Nelson?
Major Nelson at Earth.
At Earth, I see.
And, you know, there were the biggest things about this for me were, first, it's just a little corny. Right?
Sure.
I could have come up with something a little better than picking the planet.
Planets, right.
But more importantly, it was pretty clear to me that Uranus was going to be the most popular realm by far.
Right.
And we were going to have a whole bunch of gamer tags like you just got kicked in, you know.
At Uranus.
Yeah, that's right. Which I think actually probably would have gone over very well in our service. But,
right.
You know, probably wasn't the best thing for us long term. So
right.
we eventually got rid of that so that there can only be one Major Nelson.
One Major or one Not One.
That's right.
Now, what were some of the things I've been asking all my guests this? What were some of the things that surprised you? You know, you worked on the system before it launched, and then it launched. What has surprised you over the past 4 or 5 years? If you've seen the service evolve and grow, and then go from the original Xbox to the 360?
And you know, the first one I'll talk about is just really the community, because whenever you talk about these types of services and, right. and you imagine what it's going to be like when you have sort of a critical mass of users,
right.
especially in a highly interactive system like Xbox, the thing that's really cool to me is that you don't know what will happen, and really crazy stuff will start to happen. And some of my best stories, the things that I'm proudest of, are the sort of emergent behavior things that have happened in Halo 2 as an example, right? There's a church that meets in Halo quite
right.
regularly.
Right.
There's the guy that does his little soundboard of Mr. Rogers and goes around sort of taunting people with,
right.
you seem angry today,
right.
All day long. There's obviously things like Red versus Blue or the Spartan Life. I think those things are so great in terms of us giving tools to the community to sort of take the content and the system that we've built and sort of make it their own.
Right.
And, you know, I've been happily surprised by all of those things.
Right.
Technically, you know, the thing that I think we learned the most right after we launched some of the stuff we learned really quickly was we wanted to talk about live and we wanted to talk about it in a very consistent way. But in the Xbox generation, we had two really big problems, right? We had the first problem was you couldn't evolve the system very much because every game sort of implemented all of the live features themselves, right?
Right,
and so
right.
to the extent that we wanted to do something else later, you'd have to go back and ask all the games that had already shipped to implement a new feature. The best example in the Xbox One generation would have been voice messaging.
Right.
Because when that came out, what was that, in 2004,
right.
3, something like that?
Right.
You sort of ask the user to do this mental calculus, right? They had to say, am I in a game that supports voice messaging, and is the person I'm sending this to in a game that supports voice messaging?
Right. Because if then.
Yeah, then I can send him this voice message. It's just not something that you can then talk about. It's not something that sort of users will grok. And sort of it really limited our ability to sort of push the bounds of the system. The other one was really consistency. I wrote the first couple of drafts of the certification requirements for a lot of the stuff on Live. Those
right.
are the things that we ask developers to follow
right.
when they're implementing game features. Hardest thing to do is to write those things.
Really?
It's like writing an army manual.
Why?
Because you have to write something down that anybody across the world will read and implement something sort of consistently.
And understand right? it, right.
So, you know, an example I always remember from the offline requirements was trying to write a certification requirement that said the user should be able to tell which menu item is highlighted.
Okay, pretty simple.
That's
think.
Right. That's where I wanted to start with. Well,
right.
we kept going and people kept giving us feedback. They didn't understand what they wanted to do, or they thought they were going to fail, or they were doing things that really didn't match. And we'd gotten down to where this thing was like 2 pages long, and it had things like, if you walked into a room and you had never seen anything that had happened,
right.
you could immediately tell what was going on the screen. And this crazy sort of
so
like
this is
logic.
just highlighting a menu.
That's right.
That's it. And there's 2 pages on
and then,
that.
You know, you start thinking about, well, what if it's a yes-no versus a multi-list?
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of those sorts of things that start going on. The end result of that, though, was like, the features were just implemented inconsistently. They were close, but
right.
you know, when you wanted to go to the friends list in one game, maybe it was in a slightly different place, or the buttons were in a different place, or maybe there was a different button you used to access it. And that makes it hard for users to really sort of understand how to use the system in a consistent way and to sort of really grok what's going
right.
on. So that was the key learning, frankly, that we used to sort of do the guide button on the Xbox 360 console, so that
right.
you would start to have that consistent experience around Live, and one that can sort of grow with the service versus being locked into sort of the game implementation.
Right. Because when you look at the 360, as I've told all my, we've discussed with most of my guests, is it's such an evolution from the original Xbox, you know, having, as you said, having voice in some games and not in others, to having it across the entire console. When you look back to the original Xbox and the implementation of Live, what are some of the features that you surprise you that weren't used that much, or that perhaps, how do I describe this? Because where I'm getting at is, I want your opinion on voice masking.
Voice masking, you know, when we were first launching, we were making some really bold bets back then, right?
Right.
We were saying, hey, we're going to be broadband only.
Right.
Hey, we're going to make voice an integral part of the game experience. And everybody told us that both of those bets were dumb, right?
Right.
They were the wrong things to do. I think those have both borne out. But at the time, we were also just going through a whole bunch of sort of uncharted territory.
Right.
And one of the things we really got stuck on is what does it mean, you know, to really expose yourself by using your real voice in a game? And is that going to be a problem? Are we going to cause privacy concerns? Are people just going to be unwilling to use the system? As an example, we were looking at a lot of research that would say that in certain parts of the world, people were a lot less comfortable talking to strangers.
Right.
And so we knew that, and they were comfortable with text because that was already a really anonymous sort of sure. mechanism. But here they were sort of exposing their real voice, which felt like a lot more of the personality came through. So we went down this thing of, wow, maybe we need to put something in there to make it so that you can anonymize yourself if you need to be. We were worried that, women on the service would not want to be identified that, or that kids might want to not sound as childish, that kind of thing. So we put the technology in. The technology didn't sound great.
Yeah.
It frankly became the, we're going to kick you out of the session now.
Right. If you use voice mask.
Right. That's right. the other thing there is I think people sort of attached onto the concept of you using voice a lot better than we thought they would, right? It just didn't, cause as many of those
issues. The privacy issues didn't matter.
It didn't really, people just really sort of love being social
right.
with each other.
Right. Now, you play a lot of games.
I do.
What's your gamer score now?
I'm closing in on 10K.
That's not bad.
No, I as much time as I have.
Yeah, you're
now, and I'll say, I got the little not one.
Right.
Probably has done a couple thousand there on the games like Cars and
right.
Bees.
Right, that's true. Well, those are good games too.
That's right.
The Bees, the Bee game and whatnot. When back in the old days, are you surprised at how well we've done, or were you guys pretty much planning this like, oh yeah, this is going to be a huge success?
We thought it was going to be a huge success.
Right.
I mean, to be clear, right?
I mean, you don't go.
We didn't make an investment. I mean, we really overbuilt the service if we hadn't been successful. Like, what we built on day one
right.
Was capable of scaling to where we are today because we knew we were going to scale to where we are today. We thought it was a big idea. We wanted to sort of swing for the bleachers. We didn't know exactly how we were going to get there. There's lots of stuff that you still had to do, but we felt very confident in. And being as forward-looking as we were, that's the reason you pick things like broadband only, because
right.
you're imagining the world and sort of that transition that's coming, and you want to be positioned to take advantage of that. And just like with Xbox itself, we were believers in where we were going, and I'm excited
right.
that it's lived up to our expectations and that it continues to grow. And frankly, I think we're actually, beyond maybe where we would have whispered that we could have been
right.
Because of the attraction of the service and the great games that have been on it.
Why do you think the service has done so well versus the free side on the PC? This is a pay service for the most part, that we have the silver level membership, but
that's right. I think there's a lot to consistency and to just the gaming experience that we've created on the console, and really thinking about the expression of a console experience in an online service that sort of really has drawn a lot of people in. Just the idea that things always work, that we've done a good job sort of managing cheating, that we've pushed to have a really consistent way to sort of matchmake with your friends, that the things that we put in the system, like friends list, like achievements in this generation, have really taken off as sort of a part of how you would want to sort of enjoy those experiences. And then, frankly, I believe we've had a lot of great games
right.
that have shown sort of the power of what this type of experience is like.
Yeah, it's also, I don't think I've, in fact, I can say honestly say this, when dealing with the Xbox or any console, I don't ever have to deal with a frickin' driver.
That's
you
right.
A video driver, right. Sound driver.
Well, and there was a lot of that. One of the things that we always thought about is we had this... We had this saying of how do you make things CE simple, so consumer electronics simple. We always thought about how would a DVD player work if it was connected to the internet?
Right.
Because the key thing that we always thought about on the console, and as we were sort of transitioning at Microsoft to thinking about this space, was these things just work. And the reason that they're a great experience is they're hooked up to your TV. You're in a great room of your house for having this sort of entertainment experience. You drop a game in and it just works. And so... even when we were doing live and we were thinking about things like title updates, it was really important for us that we really nail that
right.
as something that just works, really well.
So the title updates, for people that maybe don't know, it's when you drop a disc in and when there's an update available, it just says there's a title update. If you want to go on live, you hit yes, it downloads, reboots, you're done.
Right, and it's always the same mechanism.
Yeah.
It's not different for every game.
You don't have to install it
right.
or unpack it or anything. It
right.
just does it.
That's right.
That is pretty extraordinary. Where do you think, I don't want you to give too much away, but where do you think it's going to go for the next few years? I mean, this whole concept in the years since the Xbox Live launched, we've seen YouTube, we've seen Google increase, we've seen Facebook, we've seen all these crazy things happen over the past few years. Where do we think we're going to go from here?
Great question, and I can't spill all my secrets.
Right, of course.
But it's going to be huge.
Right. Okay.
you know, I think the things I think a lot about are really making sure that we have a great social experience.
Right.
That there's something there on the service for everyone. Right. No matter sort of what reason they're coming onto the service for, we've got a lot of great people that want to play really competitive multiplayer games.
Mm-hmm.
That really want to sort of just get into that matchmaking experience and have a great match. But I also want to make sure that we continue to grow for how do I connect better with this community? How do we sort of incent and create more of these experiences where the community is empowered to do really cool stuff because of the tools that we've made available
right.
on the service and on the console. I think we've got a lot of room yet to sort of grow in that particular direction. I also am a huge fan of just – you know, where the world is going in terms of things like Xbox Live Arcade and Video Marketplace, you know, and what those things will mean when we really sort of get our heads around them and as they continue to mature and grow. You know, I was spent all this weekend showing my six-year-old old Looney Tunes off of Video Marketplace.
Right.
And it's been an amazing experience, right? He just dies laughing. It's hard to find these things.
Right.
And here they are available, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of look at that and I wonder sort of what's that communal experience around those and sort of how are we going to, you know, add that social element to sort of all the things that we're doing.
Are you surprised that, you know, some of the other consoles, and I look at my PS3 and the Wii down there, that some of the next generation consoles, they're connected. You know, the Wii is connected in a very kind of a less interactive experience, for lack of a better term. And the same thing with the PS3. Are you surprised that those consoles haven't really jumped in like we have?
You know, the first thing I'd say is I actually think they're both doing a lot of interesting stuff, and we're certainly watching them very closely. I think they understand the level of investment that we've put into this
right.
and recognize the degree of difficulty there. And, you know, I think they're looking at how do they think about online in sort of their own way. I continue to believe that we're charting the right path there, you know, even with some of the things that they're doing. Microsoft, I think, has a lot of unique advantages as it thinks about how to build online services and sort of really sort of push the bounds of what that entertainment experience can look like with consistency and ubiquity. That's just hard for those guys to replicate.
Yeah, it is kind of hard. One of the things that you worked on, and it's not really directly related to Live, is you worked on the accessories business.
That's right.
So you were kind of responsible for the great controller.
I was.
so I want to thank you
for
that.
I was one of the team, I will say.
Yeah, you were one of the team that's responsible for the great controller and all the great accessories that we have.
That's right.
So I want to thank you for those.
Well, I appreciate it.
Do you have any accessory stories for us?
You know, no, lots of great accessory stories. The really interesting thing there has been just sort of the interplay back and forth between sort of Live and sort of accessories and sort of continuing to build that ecosystem. You know, this generation alone, we've done, you know, the wireless network adapter, the
yeah.
chat pad, which is an amazing device, the camera, the two headsets, you know, frankly, the large hard drive is directly related to sort of Live, right? We're building, you know, we continue to sort of find ways that we can continue to extend our Live infrastructure
right.
and how do we add some of these accessories that make it easier to do, right?
Right.
Chat pad is a great example. We've been looking at that one since, I don't know, probably 1999 at some level. But we had talked about – we actually had a finished prototype of that device done in 2002, 2003 because we always have believed so much in sort of communication and sort of how that sort of adds to the sort of social social infrastructure. And it was crazy. In Xbox One, we had to create one that would attach both to the original I've Got Great Hands big Xbox controller.
Right.
And the Controller S. Right?
The smaller one.
Yeah, no, it was the same device, but it had this really weird docking mechanism with
right.
an extra sort of like clasp that you had to sort of hook the thing on. So it was a little...
Kludgy.
Kludgy, yeah. Never could quite figure it out. Didn't really have the scenarios or, again, sort of that consistent experience. You know, we looked at doing it, and you'd have to do different work in every game to support it in Xbox One. So it's been really cool to see now we can sort of bring those types of things into the system and continue to give people, you know, more options of how to communicate.
People love this chat pad, though. It just kind of snaps on the bottom and away it goes.
I love that device.
And it kind of, so you must feel good after 8 years getting it right, finally getting it right.
Been working on that one a while.
So that's cool. Well, listen, Mark, I'm going to let you go. So I appreciate you coming on and telling us about your memories of Live, and I'm glad that it's not Major Nelson at Uranus. So I want to thank you for that. So.
All right, man.
I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.